operations, you know, moving into Mulholland, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the next thing really is you seem to move on to Pier, towards Pier, and then gradually up towards to Aston, where there's this quite a famous battle, or famous. So you were you were the follow up.
Yeah.
It mentions bridges collapsing here. One in particular, the 11th of September, and they had to fill in. Do you remember bridges? These I think are little stream villages, stream bridges.
Holland was so many canals, and you have to get a bridge. You have to build the bridges, you see. And there's so many canals. And the ground was so rough, it was September just before the frost set in.
And do you remember anything else before the battle?
No, not really. It's actually an infantry country, and the infantry had come across. Anything that infantry came across, something big, they sent for us, you know, we were sent exploring and tanks up to boost them.
Now, one thing is, there's a case we had a close escape with a Panzerfaust or bazooka. He says he missed you from 3 yards. So would you know much about that from inside the tank?
Yeah, I don't suppose he was a jelly
How was his nerve holding up?
Was
he famous for that?
Yeah, he was a really good man. He made a lot of friends in the Holland, really famous. Hello,
and what about your own morale? You said at first you didn't really know and you weren't that nervous, then you got nervous, you know.
Yeah.
Did it get worse or did it get better or how did you?
No, there were so many troops in this war, unlike that in particular. There was very few, in this, there were so many troops. They put us in the morning, brought us out at night, put us in the work, they went to work, put us in the morning, brought us back at night, and put us in the night. And so we've got plenty of rest, if I was there, and I said, especially after we've got plenty of rest. But it's the morning, getting up in the morning, so getting up in the morning, and you don't feel like going to your work, and that's what. About morning was the worst, getting up in the morning, because you knew you had to go up and relieve the infantrymen, they were pulling the line, Because when you came back at night, there was always one man short, there was one tank short, every night there was always one tank short, and that's what it was, who's got going to do today, who's going to do today, this is in the back of your mind. But otherwise, it's just like getting up in the morning, you didn't feel it getting up, you had to go up.
Now, this was the Aston thing was the approach to the Willems Canal. I don't know how you pronounce it, Willems.
Yeah.
Can you say what the situation was? There seems to have been some troops across already, and they were putting up a Bailey Bridge or something. Could you explain it as you remember it?
We were told that they had put a squad in Herefords, a monument.
Herefords, it says.
Because I've got a picture of the major of that Hereford, he was at last. And they put a squad in it, they put a unit across, a battalion across, and they've done quite well, they've got about 200 yards on the side of the river, and they're holding it. Whereas the engineers are building this Bailey Bridge, and they've got a photograph of the lead bridge, they've chipped bricks across it, because that was only a lead. But you kind of get a tank across it, this one, they've got a Bailey Bridge. Unfortunately, and that's what we were told now. The plan of attack was, as Burton put out, we're going to line up a couple of hundred yards our side of the river, and then when the balloon goes up, we're going to go hell for leather across the Bailey Bridge and go straight, and no messing about, go straight across and go down that road. When you come to church, we're turning left, others are turning right, and some of them stay on. There was a breakthrough and pincer movement.
And how many tanks were going?
A whole lot, the whole regiment, so that would be about 60 tanks.
Now, who was going first? I believe, was it Bully? Lieutenant Bully?
Is it Bully, isn't And I went, I think it was green, actually, in the area.
Now, what about preliminary fire, or was there any air or artillery support before you went?
We were told that the ahead of us had taken 200 yards, so our idea was to open up. The co-driver gun would fire on our right, and my machine gun would fire on the left, so that was firing, and that's how we're going to go through all guns blazing. Because we were above the ground, you see, and we'd fire not keep the Germans' heads down every turning the cool mines across the road. And that was it. But they said, don't fire until you're 300 yards beyond the bridge, because the Americans are dug in and they don't want to fire again, you see. But unfortunately, they didn't tell us to do it with a heavy battle, the Germans counterattacked, and they pushed the bombers back to almost the bridge. So as soon as you cross the bridge, you should have stolen fire and have been moved, you know, because the head of us had been pushed back. And we didn't know that, and of course, the line of attack was the first few times, it was bullying,
It says bully in it's a Don Bully's troop went first, and then your troop went second.
That's right.
But you were leading your troop.
Yeah, we were the first tank. Because we've been in fifth tank, and we've been the second tank, and we've been leading. But because we were going on to the front, so we were fourth tank. Well, the first three, you know, because they had the open fire, didn't they? And of course, the Germans were on both sides of the road, and they fired bazookas. And he was the bully with wind in the neck because his head stuck in the top of his head.
It was bazooka fire that did the damage, was it?
Bazooka put the tanks out of action. Bully was put out by a bullet, so he was in the neck. Yeah. And because I could hear that he was still in the neck. The commander was suddenly, it was not until 10 on Sunday. Sunday's line was always bleeding by, and they couldn't get minor. Well, he couldn't get it. He just had to try and stop the blood. And Hutchison says, no, just hold on, and we'll be there shortly, just hold on, because we couldn't escape the war just to sort that one man. And his tank was in the ditch, and the crew bailed out when the bull died, the crew bailed out, which is a solid thing to do. So if they were staying in the tank, they'd be all right, because they were shot down before there was four generals.
So Bully's tank had gone first, been hit by a bazooka, and gone into the ditch.
Yeah, second tank, he tried to go past him, he went in the ditch on the right hand side, and he was under fire too. And the third tank couldn't get through, and he went, he panicked, and he went in the ditch. You know, it may not be, but that's, he went in the ditch. So that was three tanks, and there was the fourth one. But they were going at speed. Now, they were doing about 30 miles an hour, I mean, which is very fast for a tank. And I got hit. Now, I thought it was a bazooka hit. There was a bang, flash, a bang, and the dust. You know, my family where dust comes from when you get hit. The dust clattered down, I said, oh, hit. And that's where I thought that was the end of me, you know. But later on, the family went, hit Bully's tank. He was tearing his thing away the road, you see. You hit it, probably knocked it back into the ditch or something. And we carried on. And it was September, it was a mist, because with all these canals, there's a Scots mist that came down, and you could only see the height of the tank, 6 feet in. And I was dead scared, because it was the first tank, and I had my gun, because you went through this village of town, and I went for an anti-tank gun, which I never did see, but you couldn't see any higher. The church steeple, you know, the first thing I was going to do was go to the church steeple, because that's where you get snipers, you know. But I couldn't see that. Okay. And we saw the church and the driver, and there's cobbled roads, and they turned left and they straight up the street that we should have run. And when they got to a position, the tank ran into the ditch, and that was it. The tank strapped, and we were stuck. God, it's a shame, man. And the front of us was a wood. The road led into this wood, and it's a shame. So that tank got the mine stayed in that wood to make sure that we come into the wind. Because we couldn't move, we were stuck. What you can't see in a tank, when you're in a tank, you don't know what's behind you. It wasn't until later on in the evening that I found a Bren carrier was at all with us, and two other tanks. There were three tanks and a Bren carrier there, a machine gun, you know. So we're safe enough. I thought we were all on the road. You get that impression, you're only on the road.
So you'd gone into the ditch after you'd passed the church, yeah. And you were just stuck there. You stayed in the tank.
You stayed in the tank. Well, because our idea was to stop any reinforcements reaching the Germans, you see. So we were in a great position. And so we got our guns.
So you were in, you were where you should be. You just were immobilised.
However, we were sitting here immobilised, but the guns were working, and I turned the gun round and did a search of them. I saw these Germans, 200 of them marching across the field from the canal. They were going to the bridge to go to the bridge to relieve or to help the line. I know, 200 of them. What did you see? And I says to him, look at me, this is why he says, well, give it up. I'm here for the budget. And that was the shell. It was a perfect airbus. You've never seen any like it. One shell, it bounced above my head just about that height. And everyone in them collapsed. It was more or less what we had to do. They all collapsed. 200, all wounded and dead and whatever. And one chair. So I think that was wrong, I got money then. There was a German engineer detachment sent from to help. And Bernie said after, he said, they had managed to reach the bridge head, and you know, certainly. But, you know, we've been in trouble then, you know. So he said, we didn't think much about timing, because, you know,
now I know you can't see much that's going on. Steele Brownlee's account has that Valance was there as well. His tank was in position as well on that road. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that.
No. And he also he talks about opening up with machine guns as well on them. Do you?
Well, they had this Bren gun carrier beside us, you see, and they had a Vickers machine gun, and you know, that's how they hang it, and they must have opened up. But the shell done the damage.
But you didn't open with your machine guns?
No, I didn't open, no. I had the shell had done the damage. There was nobody to shoot at it. But those who could stand there, she had died into the hedges, you see. So, one shell, that was it. I used my machine guns, but the wood, I said, the drone disappeared into the wood, and beside this wood was a hut. And there was a lot of fluttering going on in the hut, and I said, well, I said to Brian, I said, somebody in that hut, that was on there. Well, I said, pass it off, come on. So I got a machine gun down there, and a machine gun down there, and a machine gun down there. And I discovered it at the time base. So that, yeah, I see, I always remember the thing like that, rather than the big battles, you know.
There's it says a lot of. Was your tank relatively, were there much sign of the action on your tank? Because it seems to think that there were a lot of, the tank had been spattered with bullets and possibly Panzerfaust. Do you remember that? Or was that?
Well, maybe I'll be come across a little bit, but I didn't hear it, because I was, you know, when I got that bang, it was a hell of a bang, you know, and that was it, you know.
What about when you hit Bully's tank, or the tank, that you hit. Had it done much damage to your tank?
Yeah. that's why we collapsed. We managed to held on until we got to this sort of position, and we went in the ditch. That was in Oxford, actually, and the damage was that this Crockett, which held the track, had sheared off. And the track, so we had to get the big boys up to kind of a loose Crockett, which they did do after the battle was over. And they came up to this Crockett and sort that tank, and we managed to get out, and this Crockett was left lying in the orchard, so you understand, this Crockett here. And 45 years later, say the first thing, was it the first thing? 50 years later. This woman, we were all in there for the celebrations, and we were going around these old people's homes, because these are old people as an emperor, you know, for youngsters. And this woman came up, she spoke to my Dutch friend, and she said, can you tell, ask him if he remembers any of the tanks that was wounded, or if he said wounded and damaged. And I said, well, one of the tanks I remember was the three and damaged at the bridge. And I said, well, you get damaged, and I said, well, that's a problem for me. And as I was talking to her, she had been painted with her. and put in it, and I've got to go, what is it for you? And what that's probably, and of course I thought about anyway. But he was a recluse for this thing, where he didn't really know where he was, you know. And because we're tied off into getting into the phone with him. But he phoned one of his friends, get a friend to the room, and asked him if he should get a photograph taken by him. Maybe a photograph, but get a photograph. And asked if, of course, if he get the thing moved from Holland back to Scotland, you know. And the Dutch lady was even apprehensive. She nursed this. She nursed this for 50 years, you know, and it's she wouldn't want to lose it. And I was hoping that wouldn't go any further than that. But however, still too terrible. Always after that serious ones in the hospital. And they told them to him that Cobar's a name. Under any circumstances, if you lose that, you hang on to it, and no way was going to take that away from him. And he died with his head in his hand.
Now, what do you remember after Aston? I mean, your tank was out, would it just be repaired fairly quickly? Or?
Well, it's been that night. The ERV, when they came up, they just brought it on, but they've been sheared off, and they just taken it away. And then they moved back into the town, and they stayed through the night in Aston, and they took to the church, and it's mostly church, mostly dangerous, but all the slates fell off the roof and can clap them down beside us. But however, we stayed there for the night, and the following morning, although there was a baker shop opened in Aston next morning, and it was a brown bread, and he got a loaf of corn and brown, and the brown went up, and he got to come back, and he moved the back across the bridge, and back to a lag or somewhere away from the bridge, we were on the sent there to support the heritage, you see, and we'd done a job, and that was it. And that was the only time that was not very once in the pit. There was a full tank for this.
Why hadn't the rest come across the bridge? I mean, after Balance and the other.
They all went across the bridge. They all came across the bridge already. They got 60 tanks across that bridge, and they all spread out.
Right, but there was only. You were on your own in your bit.
Yeah, that's it. And then they all came back again and decided to go back to. Took it back out of the road of that place, you know. And the story was then that the Herefords and the Mons stayed there and were relieved by the 50s. No, were relieved by the American, the US 7th Armored Division. They relieved them. And the Germans counterattacked later on, pushed the Americans back, and the 50s Scottish had to come in and start all over again. They didn't get as far as Aston, but they got just almost like the doors of Aston, and they stayed the winter there then, the 15th Scottish, so most of the people in Holland, it's a 15th Scottish, they stayed there in the houses, you know, for 3 months. They don't recognise that they're fighting for the first winter.
Now, right about this time, just after that, there's some promotions. Jock McKinnon was made Lance Corporal. I mean, did you fancy promotion yourself? I mean, did you ever think of it? You were a good gunner.
Not in that time, no, because I had promotion mainly to get a leader, you know, they were looking for troop commanders in that time.
Tank commanders, or true?
Yeah. And they asked me if I wanted to become a tank commander. I'm a bit of a boomer. I can do things alone, but they tell people to do things. I wouldn't be able to do it, you know.
As a tank commander, you didn't want to be in charge of the four or five of you.
I mean, if it'd been one tank, one man, I've got to take a tank and one man, I'd be all right, but you've got to think of the other three or four men you've got under you, and that wasn't my suit. Plus the fact, you know, I wouldn't have to be a tank commander, because I couldn't have done that, you know. You know, Mark Dean, I believe, you'd be very good.
What about, did Jock McKinnon leave you then? Or did he stay in there as Lance Corporal? Did it make a difference, him being a Lance Corporal? Now, Balance... Valance was became a sergeant then, but Brownlee became a captain, and it also meant he left. He'd stopped being commander of four troop and became third in commander. But were you aware that he wasn't? I mean, of the change in status, or did it make any difference to him?
Because there were so many of our boys, tank commanders, that were wounded or killed. That promotion was fast, and if you're good at all, you're promoted. You know, and he really became a captain. But in the army, they did that. He was a sub lieutenant, second lieutenant, captain. You know, but in the war finished suddenly, he would be brought back to lieutenant because he wasn't, what would they call, war substantiated. The fact when I came, became a sergeant, I was war substantiated. And that means it takes a court martial to bust you. Before that,
now there seems to be some operations round about the Mars next. Do you remember much about this period? There doesn't seem to be anything terribly big, but
small. The Arnhem deal was over by the time we got to Aston. I mean, they had lost more. We had lost Arnhem. I mean, they were just consolidating them. And we were in Eindhoven for a while. The military in Eindhoven. We go to the restrooms at night.
Now, this is when they got the new tank suits. Is this when you got your zoot suits?
That's it.
Now, what were they like? I left it early because I thought they didn't issue them till later. But
yeah. Well, they were good.
What can you describe? What exactly were they, and why were they so good?
It's like a one-piece overall, zipped, tied at the bottom. Tied them at the bottom.
With ties or?
Studs, you know, these studs, press studs at the bottom. It catches the wind air, the cold air going up your legs, and your arms, and you had a hood, and it could zip right up, and it was lined.
What with?
I think it was a thick material, which kept you in the time. And it was fleecy lined, you see, so I wore that in the cold weather underneath. You know, and that was quite comfortable. You know, you picked these up from the Air Force, you know, when you come across crash, you know, these things.
What about loot? Not looting, it's the wrong word. Picking up odd weapons and things. I mean, what were you carrying? What were you carrying on the back of your tank by now? Because you. I mean, did you have any machine guns, either British or submachine guns? Because a lot of tanks seem to have got Stens or Tommy guns or German Schmeisers.
I think we had a Beren. I think we managed to get a Beren gun. I was brought up with a Beren gun. But I think we managed to get a Beren gun. But that was the only thing. But it was a case of you were called out in a small patrol. I mean, you probably wasn't going to use it. You didn't have any rifles, so you had a Beren gun.
Had you used it by then?
I don't know where it comes in. I think the second, I've used it twice. The second time was when I decided that the Beren gun wasn't for me. But that was the crossing the Elbe, that was the final push, obviously. I remember that.
And the first time?
The first time was, it was just trying to, I was hosing, I saw some of the Germans and just knew were miles away from them, quite frankly, and they had to look at what the rain went out, and you closed that area, and it's got these tiny shells that you can see the bullets going, you know, and of course you aim high and the bullets are coming down because too far away. That was it, just to get there, from the hip, you know.
And what about, did you have any Stens or anything else on the back?
No, I don't think so.
What other things had you picked up? I mean, you mentioned the thing you were cooking.
No, there was a little bit of that. We meant Americans. If the Americans went into a village before you, the prices are even up. You see, you couldn't battle the villages because they had the money. But when we went in first, we managed to get the stuff cheap. And then we got some Rugers, and the Yanks were that for Rugers. The GMs were Rugers, didn't they? So we used to get together Rugers.
And you weren't bothered about Lucas yourself so much, then. It was more to flog to the Yanks. I'll come back to so you weren't so bothered about Lucas.
No, I mean, if I stuck in the house in the summer here that I fancied I'd pick up, cameras was what we were after. And films, if you get film in any village that had a camera shot, would be used after films, you see. But I wouldn't go myself. I have to put it up somewhere else, you know.
What extra other kit would you sort of sling on the back? Because it's the difference from infantry. You could actually put things in the back of the tank or on it.
No, we were all good, but on the lookout for food. And one place, I don't know where it comes after this, but we captured an egg factory. And each tank had a piece of eggs on the back of the tank. And we went all our eggs in because we had eggs for breakfast, lunch, supper. And anything you felt like it with eggs, you know, 30 dozen eggs, a lot of eggs for 4 men. And every time they had a piece of eggs in the back, and they catched his egg factory. But whether it was underwrapped, I think it was going into Germany, going, he didn't mind taking anything from Germany, but he didn't want to take that from the Dutch, because he was starving.
What else would you have on the back? I mean, would you have cooking things or things you picked up?
We didn't go in for much anything. Not at this stage.
Right, we'll come on to that. What's the next thing you remember then? Eselstein, they were there 3 days. That was around about 19th of October for a bit. Just staying there. There's not much you remember about.
I mean, there was stories going up there at the canal. The Germans were coming to the canal at night and going to this block the left side. And the British would come, down, and they would come into the thing. And there was a mad scramble. The Germans would put the great back door, and the British would run back and. I was in guard. We were in Lager. This is Lager. This is that. One of the guards, there was two of us. And we went in tears. And because of these canals, you've got a lot of turbulence. And this mate of mine disappeared. I spoke to him. And I turned away and I expected him to follow me. He didn't follow me. He was gone again. And I bumped into somebody else. And I says, what are you doing over here? He says, I'm waiting for you. I said, well, I'm waiting for you. He says, I spoke to somebody up there. She didn't speak to me. Oh, I don't know who it was or what it was, but there you are. We feel it was a German. He's the most impressive. And I spoke to him and he kept quiet. And I've come the way, he turned away the other way. And these are foggy. And it was foggy. I mean, you could hardly see your fingers on. And but that, I kind of corroborate that, but yeah. The queer things that happened in the mind.